Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to the Nonbushi Watchmaking Show. Today, we're going to be going over what an estimate means and how to understand it. So, watch estimates can be pretty confusing, and a lot of the customers, a lot of people that I get from average customers, a lot of the messages that I get are in regards to what a watch estimate really means and how to really understand it, because it's confusing to them as the average watch guy. For a watchmaker and for your real seasoned watch enthusiast, you'll probably understand almost everything on it. But as an average watch customer and as an average watch buyer, it's pretty confusing, you know, and I can definitely see that. I definitely wouldn't know what you know, a hospital bill would say unless, I'm sure a doctor would. Having said that, so let's go over some of the stuff that we commonly see in on a watch estimate. So let's get on with the show. The first one we're going to come across is the job number. So the job number is simply just your reference in terms of your repair. And if you ever need to call someone or if you ever need to email somebody, you can always reference your repair number with the reference or job number. So the job number usually denotes your specific repair. If you ever need to use it in the future, you know, let's say if something's wrong with it or whatnot, you can always reference the job number. The reference number, if you're following along with this, I've also posted up a article on it as well, how to read a watch estimate and understand what it means. If you go over to nobswatchmaker.com and take a look at the watch tips, you'll definitely see this article there. So if you take a look at the next one's reference number. The reference number is commonly also known as the model number. Some companies denote it a little differently. The reference number is the same as the model number again. So some companies will use the model number or reference number to your specific watch, in the sense, like if your watch is a Rolex Submariner, you have a special set of model numbers for a Rolex Submariner. If your watch is a Breitling Transocean, it has a specific set of numbers for a Breitling Transocean. So whatever model your watch is, whether it's a Tissot, Hamilton, etc., usually there's something called model number. A model number just helps the brand or company and or independent watchmaker understand what specific number or model your watch is. So let's just say some watches, let's just say a Rolex Submariner has a, 16610. If we ever see 16610, we will know right away it's a Rolex Submariner. So stuff like that is what you'll see commonly in the model number or reference number on an estimate. So if you ever need to call someone or if you ever need to speak to anybody and they ask you, what's your watch, what type of watch do you have, or what type of model number your watch is, you can tell them 16610 for this example. Some companies do not use the model number, and some companies just write out the specific model. So whether it's a Rolex Submariner or Tudor Pelagos or Breitling Transocean, Omega Seamaster, etc., they'll put the watch model name next to the model number. So some companies will also denote that as well. So just take a look at that, and that's your model number, okay? The model number is different from your serial number, which brings us to our next one. The next one is going to be serial numbers. Serial numbers are also commonly known as case numbers. So it could be either or. Some companies will denote it as serial numbers. Some companies will denote it as case numbers. So case numbers are used here in the same sense as serial numbers. Each case is serialized. You have to remember that. For some companies, some brands, each case is specially serialized. And this just helps us track the batch of the watch, and this helps us track this watch to you as a specific owner of the watch. So let's say you bought a Rolex Submariner and I bought a Rolex Submariner. Your serial number is going to be 1234. My serial number may be 1235. So if a Rolex Submariner, let's say we both purchase at the same time, we both have warranty cards, etc., and we send our watches in, Rolex would know that 1235 is for me and is my watch, and 1234 is your watch, okay? So serial numbers lend their hand in terms of legitimacy and specialization to that specific watch. It's also one of the reasons why if if you ever lost your watch or you ever got your watch stolen, you can call Rolex and tell them, hey, my serial number is 1235, my model number is 16610, I just got my watch stolen. They'll immediately put a stolen marker, or they'll put like a note on your file for that specific serial number to be mindful for all its authorized dealers and all the other HQs of Rolex, right? Because we all know sooner or later a watch will need servicing. Unless the customer brings their watch into a random guy on the street and whatnot, it might not get tracked. But we know that sooner or later it's gonna need parts. It might need a gasket, it might need this, it might need that. And that's gonna have to go through original parts. That's gonna have to go through original Rolex. So when it does go through Rolex and any of its authorized jewelers and dealers, we will have a stopper. We will have a note in the system that says, beep, 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 this is a stolen watch, right? And not in that exact fashion, but you get what I'm trying to say. So the note, that serial number, helps us denote specific ownership and specific watches, because that's just the day and age we live in with so much watches. There's so many watches that get produced. We need to start getting serial numbers, and it's not all, but it is good. Movement numbers are a little bit tricky. Movement numbers are different from your model number and your serial number. Movement number is inside your watch and it's on the actual movement or caliber. A movement number usually just helps brands denote the specific batch the caliber was made in, or specific production line the movement was made in, and that just kind of helps us mitigate certain issues. So if we know those 10 watches done in batch 10, and it just happens that five of those watches in batch 10 keep getting issues, we can kind of denote, we can kind of drill down where the issues are coming from. So let's just say we figured out that the issues were coming from batch 10, and we look up all the models and all the movement numbers that were created in batch 10. And next time a watch comes in and they have a movement from batch 10, we can reasonably assume they might have the same issues. So that's what movement numbers are generally for. Movement numbers just help us denote the specific serial number on the actual movement. It's different for each company. Not all companies do it. This is most likely for in-house movements most of the time. If a watch has an ETA caliber or whatnot, that's probably not going to work. But for the most part, movement numbers are for very, very in-house specific watches. And you're probably going to commonly see that in a lot of these brands that have ventured into in-house movements. This just increases their quality control process and in the after sales, if they didn't catch any issues within the manufacturing processing section of the production line. All right, so next up is mandatory service. Mandatory service is also commonly known as necessary service. Necessary services, we use it in the sense that anything that we put under necessary is required. So it's almost it's the name is implied. One thing I really want to talk about when it comes to necessary service is that a lot of people, one of the biggest comments I get from customers is why something is necessary. Why is a complete service necessary? Why is a crown necessary? Why is a crystal necessary? And one of the things I want to point out in this is the best way I can explain it is that whatever we put under necessary, we put on the necessary because if we do not do the specific action or specific repair that we're denoting, the watch will either come back sooner or the watch's service cycle won't go its full length. That is how we determine what is necessary or not. So the most basic one would be, let's say you have a crown, right? The crown on the side of your watch that sets the time, etc. Let's say the crown is not broken, or the crown is not damaged completely, but the crown is worn. And let's say you sent the watch in for a service and we notice that your crown is worn altogether.
we know that, let's say if we took a look at it and we determined that the crown, it won't last more than maybe another 6 months, that is when we'll that's when we'll make a new crown mandatory. If the crown affects, we understand that currently right now the crown is not an issue. The crown is still relatively good. But we know about 6 months into it, the crown might have an issue. The crown might break, or the crown might malfunction, or the crown might sacrifice the overall integrity of your watch. So let's just say that if the crown does mess up, or the crown does become faulty, there goes the water resistance of your watch. And if the water resistance of your watch goes, the overall integrity, dustproof, moisture damage, etc., everything gets opened up right away. So one of the biggest things that I get spoken to about is exactly this. You know, why is something mandatory? Why can't it be optional? And that's one of the biggest issues I have to always explain to people. Just because right now it looks good, or let's say right now there's not that big of an issue. There's not a real functional issue at the moment. But if we look at it and we determine that it's gonna become an issue in the near future, sooner rather than later, it has to be mandatory. This is very common in things such as the crown, things such as the crystal, things such as the crown tube. These things become mandatory when and if it affects your water resistance or the overall service cycle or the integrity of the watch. Please keep that in mind. Please keep that in mind. Now, the next up would be an optional services. And optional services are things, some of these things are very, very self-explanatory. So having said that, optional services, I just want to get it out of the way and I want to explain it. Optional services are things that are not an issue and we don't see are an issue, but that we feel it's aesthetics. So when it comes to optional services, most of the time we'll offer an optional service if it doesn't become a functional issue. So let's just say the hands on your watch are scratched or the dial is scratched. We'll offer those as optional services to replace it because it's not necessary. It's not going to affect the functionality of your watch. If we look at a crystal, if a crystal is cracked, or if the crystal is cracked, it might warrant a mandatory service. But if a crystal is slightly chipped, or the crystal is ever so slightly scratched up or whatnot, things that aren't going to sacrifice the water resistance and the overall integrity of the watch are optionals. And that's something that I just want to throw out the way. Just in case some people don't understand what optional services are. And next up on this would be customer requests. If you take a look at some estimates over in the industry, you'll often have either customer requests or notes or whatnot. Both of these things denote specific statements from both parties. So customer requests are generally from customers who actually just want to tell the manufacturer or the company something. Let's say the customer doesn't want to get their watch polished. For example, Rolex always does a free refinishing when it comes to complete service. So if you are one of those people who do not want their watches refinished during the process, or does not want to get their watches polished at all, customer request section is where you would usually put, you don't want to get it refinished or whatnot, or if you're going to go through an authorized dealer, make sure you tell the service associate that you specifically do not want the watch polished, or whatever other additional requests that you have. Now remember, these are customer requests on these estimates. When it comes to manufacturers and brands like Rolex, Breitling, Omega, there might not be that much leeway in terms of what you can and can't do. A lot of these companies don't really remember, at the end of the day, this is a request. This is not a statement. So having said that, remember that they also reserve the right to not to listen to. It's very, very unfortunate, but that's what happens when you are a huge brand and you do have a lot of money. And this is often one of the reasons why a lot of people prefer to go to independent watchmakers, where they have an overall more of a control in terms of what they can and can't do. And that's customer requests. Notes, if you take a look at some of, if you're following along, please make sure you're also taking a look at some of the please make sure you take a look at the article I just posted too as well, in terms of how to read it, so this way it's easier for you to take a look at. I know just listening to me talk about it might be boring, but I do have examples and I do have sample sheets of the common industry format, you know. But for example, back to the topic at hand, notes. Notes, this is a section where it's the complete opposite of a customer request. Notes are comments that the estimator from the brand or estimator from the company has, and they want to remind you or to let you know about certain things. One common note that's repeatedly used all the time is for refinishing. They'll often write, refinishing is as best as possible, and polishing will not get rid of all and every single scratch. That's a common note, but it's little things like that. So think of it like the customer request, but from the company and or brand side of the equation. And that's pretty much it for a that encompasses everything that is kind of foggy in terms of a watch estimate. Everything else is pretty self-explanatory. Let me take a look at this. All right, that's actually pretty good to hear. So we have some common questions usually asked regarding estimates, and this is actually a pretty good segue into this stuff. So the first question I usually get from a lot of customers is, my watch is under warranty, why did I receive an estimate? First things first, let me go over some of these things. The reason, if your watch is under warranty, if your watch is a relatively new purchase and you received an estimate for your watch, first things first, I always want to make sure that the company and or brand did not mess up or accidentally send it to you. The chances are very slim, but mistakes will and can happen. So you should definitely ask, hey, is this accurate? You know, so-and-so, my watch is relatively new or whatnot. Or my watch was recently serviced, why am I receiving an estimate? That's first. Second, the biggest reason that I see watches come back in regards for an estimate is because the watch violated the service warranty and or purchase warranty. When a watch violates the warranty, you will get a new estimate. And a common question may be, what can violate the service warranty? Well, a couple things can violate the service warranty, but let's go over the most common one. The most common reason why a watch gets voided in terms of warranty is because of impact damage. Watches that are serviced or watches that are recently purchased are always covered under warranty unless it's impact damage and or a user introduced error. So the warranty will cover everything that the watch is supposed to do. Let's say you just bought the watch and you walked out with the watch and then you accidentally dropped the watch. Let's say you dropped the watch pretty hard and next thing you know, your watch is not keeping time anymore. You bring it back in, you're gonna get a service. You're gonna get an estimate right away. Reason being is the impact is user introduced. The way they see it is just the same exact way if you have an iPhone. If you crack your screen, it is not covered under a warranty. The best way I can explain it is this. Let's say you go to a car mechanic and you got an oil change. Then you left the car mechanic and you suddenly got into a car accident, God forbid, of course. Knock on wood. Okay. And then you go back to the car mechanic and you say, hey, is my oil change under warranty? That's essentially what it is. When you go in for, if your watch has recently had a service, the warranty covers the movement inside, it covers the timekeeping, it covers everything that could naturally go wrong because of the watchmaker's fault. and impact damage could wreck ridiculous amounts of damage inside the movement, and that is usually a user introduced error. And there has to be a clear distinction. Anytime it's the watchmaker's fault, it will be under warranty. So if there's an issue in regards to the timekeeping, if there's an issue in regards to the watch not functioning correctly or whatnot, but then if you bring it back because you drop your watch and suddenly it's not running anymore, or it's not running accurately anymore, the watchmaker can usually tell. And I go over that a little bit in my book as well. The watchmaker can usually tell, watchmakers, if they're a qualified watchmaker, they can usually tell something is user introduced in terms of impact damage or whatnot. There's a lot of telltale signs, either the dents or dings on the external casing or internal. There are some things that occur inside a watch that we know to look for in regards to an impact damage. Sometimes pivots get broken, sometimes things get shifted a little bit, little things like that we pay very, very close attention to, and that's usually how we can tell if a watch received impact or whatnot. But for the most part, you received an estimate because it's voided, you've somehow voided the warranty. And I would always ask for clarifications, and I would always ask why. Make sure you ask. Don't get me wrong, understand your reasoning and understand what you did wrong, but you always want to figure out what happened. All right, another common one, another in regards to what we're talking about, another one that leads up to this is, my watch is fine, quote unquote, there are no dings, dents, or damages. Believe it or not, I do get this a ridiculously amount of times. Usually when a watch comes in for an impact damage or whatnot, and I tell the customer, hey, listen, there's an issue with the watch, it's not covered under the warranty, some of our findings are that, you know, there's impact here, here, and here, right? And sometimes what the customer usually tells me is, hey, my watch is fine, there are no dings, there are no dents, there are no damages, you know, this is absurd, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I'm sure you get this at the point. But here's the thing. For us watchmakers, we usually deal with a lot of these microscopic parts. We deal with very, very, very small parts on a regular basis. And what I want you to really, really understand is that the customer is looking at it with the naked eye. Us as watchmakers, we're constantly looking at things with like a four power loop, or sometimes a 10 power loop, sometimes a 25 power loop, or sometimes we're using something as powerful as a microscope at like 50 times to 100 times. So when you're using things that can see beyond the naked eye, we're definitely gonna see things that you won't see, okay? We're seeing things with state-of-the-art tools. We're looking at things with state-of-the-art image processing as well. So you can only imagine what we find, what we see. We can literally see things that you won't even fathom about, okay? So that's one of the biggest things I really want to explain to customers, and that's usually how I explain it to customers when the customers tell me that there's no such, that my watch isn't damaged, my watch isn't dinged, my watch isn't, there's no problems with my watch whatsoever, you know, I looked at it before, blah, blah, blah. Look, I understand what you're saying. It's just like if I was to bring my car to a car mechanic, and listen, the last thing I want to do is pay extra money. I understand that. Look, I've been on both sides before. If I bring my car to a car mechanic and I just want an oil change, but the dude's telling me, listen, you know, there's issues here, here, and here, and the last thing I want to do is dish out extra money. I understand that. I completely understand that. But listen, one way you should be reframing your mindset would be, these guys are the professionals and they mean well. You know, like if you're going to a qualified and a trustworthy person and they're upfront about everything, if their intent is pure, and I always talk about this, if their intent is pure, you should feel more than inclined to do something about it. If the watchmaker pointed out something to you, and their intent is like ridiculously pure, and they really want to make sure you get your watch fixed correctly, they want you fixed the right way, you should almost feel inclined inclined to do it. I've had numerous occasions where sometimes my car is malfunctioning or whatnot, and the car mechanic is literally telling me, like, dude, man, hey, I understand you came in just for an oil change and blah, 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 but here are some of these issues we found. I understand you probably won't see it, but we found it, and so and so, our computers are telling us this. Look, I understand. If that's the case, safety is more important. My life is more important. I rather pay a little extra to save on certain things, and why not, right? But my point is this: the intent needs to be pure. When you're explaining stuff to the customer, sometimes the customer is hard-headed, but if your intent is pure, if they decline it, sure, let it go. If you're the customer and the watchmaker is explaining something like this to you, look, don't be afraid to say, hey, okay, I apologize, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, you don't have to apologize, but hey, look, I'm sorry. Please, I'd like to decline the work. And don't be afraid to get a second opinion. You know, like, if you don't trust your watchmaker at the point, don't be afraid to get your watch back and get a second opinion. But here's the thing. I want to make sure that everyone understands this. It's very important to get a qualified watchmaker. It's very important to find a trustworthy watchmaker. And if you listen to other episodes in terms of how to find a good watchmaker, trust and integrity is one of the biggest things in terms of finding a good watchmaker. So find yourself a good watchmaker. You won't have an issue when it comes to things like this. All I'm trying to say is this: if your watchmaker right now is someone you trust, you should feel inclined to do whatever the watchmaker suggests. If I go to a doctor and I'm like, hey man, I feel sick and so and so, and they offer me so and so, and I trust them, do it. Just listen to what they're saying and take their advice. Now, you as a customer, or you as a buyer, collector, or enthusiast, whatever, you should be almost intuitive in terms of how you feel. If a watchmaker is telling you so and so, and the feeling is a little off, something isn't there. Okay, so I would make sure you evaluate your situation. For the most part, when I ever get to this stage of a voided warranty, my chances of a customer declining my repair when I talk to a customer face to face and whatnot are slim to none. Usually the way I explain it, if you explain it correctly and you have the proof to show it, the customer is always more than inclined to get the job done. That's just my experience. And if you're an experienced watchmaker and you're independent watchmaker, it helps, man. It helps to take pictures. Pictures are great to show to customers. If you can take pictures, great. You know, that's going to separate you from your competition. Quote-unquote, not much anyway, but that's going to help you charge the extra. You know, that's going to help you go that extra mile. When you're talking to customers, sometimes customers, they don't see the whole picture. You know, they just hear what you're saying, but they don't understand, right? But if you show them pictures, you show them the impact damages, you show them inside internal issues, they're going to be more than inclined to say, hey, okay, this makes sense. You know, there's proof here. You know, there's rationale now. It's not just you talking. It's not just fluff. You know, there's an actual hard proof. And that's about all I have for this topic. Another common question, okay, is my watch is running slow, fast. How come you can't just fix it without doing a complete service? This is a very common one, believe it or not, guys. Very, very common. Unfortunately, no. We do not do. I do not recommend any watchmaker to randomly regulate a watch with no history or know of the history of the watch. Now, if the watch was a recently serviced watch and you do know the history behind it, then that's your judgment call to make. But if a customer comes in to me and he's a brand new customer, or the watch is relatively brand new to me in terms of history, and I know nothing about the watch, and the customer is telling me the watch is running slow or it's running fast, I will make sure the first thing I do, if I take a look at it, if it passes the timing test, I don't touch it, right? But I have to get the whole context of the story. You know, how old is the watch? You know, when was the last serviced? Who was it serviced by? And so on and so forth. And I have to get the macro picture, the global picture. And once I get that, then I can make a more educated decision. So if in the macro picture, the watch hasn't been serviced in a long time, I don't know who serviced it before, and the watch is just running fast or running slow, I will not regulate the watch. And this is very common in the industry. Most companies and most brands will not do a quick fix. They won't do a small job. They won't do a partial job. Most of the time, you'll find something like this at a independent level, where they will do a small job. Or if you bring it to a watchmaker over at the mall, they will do a small job. But you do have to mitigate your losses. You do have to understand what you're getting yourself into. Okay, if you're looking at the problem from a micro perspective, regulating it is just putting a band-aid over the issue. You're not fixing the actual problem. You're not fixing what's causing the issue, right? So that's one of the biggest things. Points of this is that if you do regulate something that you do not know any history about, that watch will almost always come back because of another issue. And because you touched it last, it's almost tied to your name. So you have to really, really understand this topic here that we're talking about. Now, if the watch was just, first things first, let me preface this. If there are some special circumstances where we will actually regulate it. So let me give you some special situations. Let's just say you had your watch serviced and about 4 months ago or 5 months ago, whatnot. And then there's an issue with it. Let's say your watch is running slow or it's running fast. Sure, you bring it into the watchmaker. The watchmaker takes a look at it. The watchmaker knows the history now. The watchmaker knows that he serviced it last, okay? So because he knows he serviced it last, he's more inclined to work on something that he's touched before. And if he's a qualified watchmaker or a competent watchmaker, he will know what the issue is and he can fix it. And if he knows his quality of work, then he can actually either just do that minor adjustment, or if he realizes his mistakes, he will do a complete service free of charge. It depends on the issue, okay? I know in the situation for this, I very, very seldom have to ever regulate anything and after a full service, because when it leaves my hand, I know I already put 250% of my effort into that watch. So when you receive the watch, most of the time, 99.9% of the time, there's going to be no issue with it for years to come. Okay. Now, if in the off chance there is an issue and it comes back, first things first, you always check everything A to Z. You check what the possible issue could be. And then from that perspective, you can take a look at how you can fix it, if it requires a brand new service again, which will then be covered under the service warranty, or if it requires a minor adjustment. And these are some of the things that the watchmaker has to do, okay? But for you as the customer, you don't have to worry about something like this. Now, if you just want a watchmaker to regulate something, and if you bring it to a qualified watchmaker, if it has never been through his hands, will not accept just a quick fix. Please remember that. A watchmaker that you do not know, or the watchmaker that does not know the history behind the watch, will not accept a quick fix. And if a watchmaker is accepting a quick fix, it's almost because of money. You have to remember that. Most of the industry, the companies, the brands, and whatnot, they will not do a quick fix unless they know the history behind it. So if there was an issue with a watch and you send it back to the manufacturer and they do a quick fix on it, it's because they know they messed up. And that's usually the watchmaker's fault. And that will be covered under the warranty. But for you to send your Rolex into Rolex after never having a service for 7 years and whatnot, and you're complaining that it's running slow, you better expect a complete service estimate, okay? Rolex is not just going to regulate the watch and make it run faster for you. Remember that, okay? So,
let me take a look at what's next. What's another common question we get?
Another common question we get is, how long does a complete service take? Okay, that's another common one. Complete service, it's not easy, okay? Doing a full service on a watch is not easy. Doing a full service on a watch can take about 2 to 8 weeks at a time. And that's a very, very broad time frame. But 2 weeks is the fastest, and 8 weeks is the longest, or for the average, okay? Just keep that in mind. It depends on the watchmaker's workload, it depends on the company or brand's workload, but for the most part, it's gonna be sooner rather than later. Most of the time it's really 2 to 4 weeks, and then you also have to factor in quality control processes and whatnot. But if you're sending it straight to the manufacturer, sometimes it could be 4 to 8 weeks. If it has to go to Switzerland, then you can expect even longer, so on and so forth, okay? Most of the time, services take a while because either they have to source the part or they have to create the part. And if you're sourcing a part, it's either you're looking for the part or it has to get, or you have to wait for the part from Switzerland. And now if you're creating the part, that in itself is a long process. If you're creating the part, measurements have to be taken, everything has to be taken into account. So for the most part, it's 2 to 8 weeks. That's the time frame. Most of the time you have to remember, a complete service for it comes to watchmaking, it's not fast food, guys. You know, like, that's one of the things I have to constantly remind people. You're taking apart a watch in its entirety, and you're doing it, and you have to wait for parts, and you have to inspect everything, and it's not fast food, guys. You're not going to McDonald's and at the drive through to pick up a McChicken or some shit. Take it easy, relax. It's 2 weeks, guys, for the most part. And listen, if you're going to a qualified watchmaker, you should feel good about the service. You should feel that you're getting taken care of, okay? Some customers, they don't like having to wait and all that. And listen, there's expectations, and there's realistic expectations, and then there's far-fetched expectations. And you almost have to keep that in mind, guys. But again, the time frame, most common time frames, 2 to 8 weeks. 2 to 4 weeks is usually the more realistic one. 4 to 8 weeks are really for vintage and for watches that, are very, very complicated in terms of processing, in terms of functionality and whatnot. So just keep that in mind, okay? The next topic of discussion, okay? Why does a complete service cost so much? Listen, guys, a complete service in terms of the overall picture, the best way, let me sum this up nice and quickly, okay? Buying the watch is easy. Buying the watch is cheap in the grand scheme of things, okay? Buying the watch is extremely easy. It's the regular maintenance you have to worry about. Again, you do not buy a car or you do not buy a watch without thinking about the service upkeep. Buying the watch and buying the car is cheap in terms of the regular maintenance of the life. You factor that into account, okay? Again, guys, a complete service costs a lot because, listen, man, it's watchmaking. You have to appreciate it for what it is. And one of the greatest things that I usually do, okay, and this is for extremely special clients, sometimes the people who don't understand why a service costs so much, I usually bring them in for a special workshop and I show them, listen, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take apart a watch together. We're going to take apart a watch together, and we're going to take it apart. We're going to identify the issues, and we're going to reassemble it and lubricate it. 9 times out of 10. Actually, no. I want to venture to say 10 times out of 10. Okay? But I'm just going to give you a conservative number. 9 times out of 10. We never, ever make it to the lubrication section of it, nor do we really ever make it to the complete assembly of the process without losing a single part. Okay. Customers or average watch guys or whatnot, they will usually, I'll usually have them take apart the watch, clean it, reassemble it without losing anything. 10 times out of 10 actually, everyone loses something, okay? And for you to question why a complete service costs so much and you lost a part already says a lot, okay? So for us, in the grand scheme of things, we have to show the average watch guy the reasoning behind it. And I feel like that's where the industry is lacking, okay? The industry is lacking in terms of how to get shit done. Man, the industry covers a lot of these brands and all these fancy shit and all these, you know, great marketing and whatnot. But there's a clear, you know, romance in it. You know, none of this shit is romantic, okay? None of this shit is like sunshines and rainbows, okay? Listen, there's a reason why it costs so much. It's hard work. It's, don't get me wrong, it's elegant work. But at the end of the day, it's not like you're putting together a freaking mat, you know. It's not like you're putting an ABC mat together to get it done. You understand? You're taking apart an entire watch, okay? You're taking apart like mini microscopic parts that you can literally blow all the parts away with your mouth. And this is the reason why it costs so much. You know, you're paying for the expertise. You know, it's as simple as that. I'm just gonna leave it at that. And that concludes the Estimate 101, guys. Listen, this is a quick synopsis of the whole thing. If you guys have a chance, I'd highly recommend you taking a look at the article. I'll attach it in the show notes. But it shows, you know, exactly what a dial, hands, pusher, etc. It shows you visually what they are. And just in case you guys don't know what they are. But for the most part, guys, I would definitely check it out. You might like it. There are some things I don't cover, such as service confirmations and whatnot. But for the most part, I think that's about it. Okay. And listen, man, I thank you guys for everything. Again, I just want to make sure I give you guys a shout out. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate you guys. And if you guys have made it this far, you guys are awesome, okay? If you guys want to take a look at more, and if you guys have not gotten the book yet, the 100 Plus No BS Watch Tips, I would definitely check that out. If you like what you listen to, I'm sure you guys will love that book. That's 150% from my end. Listen, at the end of the day, take care, guys. I hope you guys have a great day and have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful week. Take care.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.